Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You may not know the name Bobby Cutler, but maybe we all should. A charming Harvard raconteur, lawyer, trusted backroom negotiator, so much so that in the 1950s, President Ike Eisenhower brought Cutler to Washington to reform national security and promptly appointed him the country's very first national security advisor. He was called Ike's mystery man, at his elbow, calling, for instance, for more candor about the dangers of nuclear weapons. The New York Times wrote at the time, "No man, with the possible exception of the president, knows so many of the nation's strategic secrets." But Bobby Cutler also backed Eisenhower's ban on communists and homosexuals in the government. This was during the Red Scare, fear of communists, and the lesser-known Lavender Scare. Senator McCarthy and FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover both thought to be secretly gay, ferreting out others who were gay. In fact, Hoover would report his latest suspicions to Bobby Cutler, blissfully unaware that Bobby was gay. So were other men in national security. Skip Coons, a naval intelligence officer who Bobby deeply repressed while in government, fell deeply in love with later. And Skip's friend Stephen Benedict, who held several important security jobs. After both Bobby and Skip died, Stephen inherited Cutler's exquisite diaries, which he gave to reporter Peter Schinkel. Peter is Bobby Cutler's great-nephew. His new book is Ike's Mystery Man, The Secret Lives of Robert Cutler. Peter joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Stephen Benedict joins us from the studios of WGTE in Toledo. Stephen, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
You are, I understand, 90-plus years now?
92. A couple weeks ago.
Well, what's it like for you to travel back to this time?
Very challenging to try to make some sense out of things that happened 70 years ago.
Right.
I can't pretend that I've done that.
I mean, it's astonishing to read it now, but how secretive and afraid you all had to be.
Yeah, but this wasn't something that occupied us 24/7. You develop a certain crust that protects you against over-worrying a situation that you really can't do anything about once you're in it.
Peter, your exploration started when your mom and aunt sat you down, I think it was as recently as 2006.
That's correct.
And told you that Uncle Bobby, beloved, exciting Uncle Bobby, was gay. I mean, are you thinking, wait, gay and first national security advisor? That does not go together.
That's right. And very close friend of Ike's when homosexuality was so severely persecuted.
And let's be clear about this. When it came to the federal government, of the people who were outed and hunted down and fired, 90% of them were not communists. They were gay or lesbian.
That's right. The numbers of gays would be reported, and those numbers would be used to justify greater Red Scare.
It really goes back to 1947, and that is when the Lavender Scare, so-called, really began to get ahead of steam, and partly because it was associated with the whole Elger Hiss Whitaker Chambers affair.
This is Chambers, the former communist spy who accused Hiss of being a communist, and then papers turned up showing that Chambers had had homosexual encounters before becoming a Christian conservative.
Which helped to combine these two issues of communism and homosexuality. Almost a complete myth. There's almost no truth whatsoever to the proposition that homosexuality predisposes anyone to either communism or to being blackmailed.
Hmm. But Peter, talk about Bobby Cutler's role as national security advisor, called an honest broker.
He would enable each of these agencies to have their say. Ike had very vigorous debates. Cutler's successors were more proponents or advocates for this or that policy.
Yeah. The New York Times at the time, as I said, raved about him, a proper Bostonian, an earnest Episcopalian. Finally, Mr. Cutler is a bachelor's bachelor. This is the Times writing. He enjoyed himself among the girls and loved women all his life, but no women, however charming, could completely capture his mind and imagination. Did people not know?
it was not a question of being able to find liaisons that would cause one to say he was an active homosexual. He was not.
Bobby Cutler's life struggle to understand his sexual orientation played out through these very trying years in the crucible of the National Security Council. I think his final understanding that he loved this young man, Skip Coons, with all his heart came as late as 1957.
After they'd worked together, I mean, for many years.
Correct. It's actually all the sadder because it is in many ways an unrequited love.
Yeah. Well, but then we have Eisenhower. In the military, he was asked to drum up a list of people suspected to be gay or lesbian. And I love the passage. You write one of his assistants, a woman, says, well, I'll write up the list for you, but I'm going to be the number one on the list. And another woman said, and I'm going to be number two. And he just said, oh, there's so many people in my military who are gay and lesbian. What do I care? But then as president, he goes on to sign Executive Order 10450, which requires every federal agency to investigate both new hires and existing workers to find any connections to communism, but also criminal behavior, drug addiction, sexual perversion, and that was homosexuality.
Eisenhower did sign that order, but it had already been substantially developed by President Truman's Attorney General.
Well, but it led to something called the Miscellaneous M Unit in the State Department. They reported in 1953 that 99 employees had left. No one fired for homosexuality was ever found to have compromised national security in any way. And it led to suicides. And Peter, you quote security agent Peter Zluck, who said, what do I care about due process? If the son of a bee is queer, out he goes. And then a little later, he said he felt a little bad about the suicides. One guy, he barely left my office, and he must have had this thing in his coat pocket, and boom, right on the corner of 21st and Virginia. I mean, you remind us that there was a lawmaker who committed suicide after it was threatened that his child, his son, would be outed. This was a terrible time.
Yeah, and that would be Senator Lester Hunt and his son.
Yeah.
This whole miasma of apprehension was something that was very much in the air at the time.
Well, in fact, Stephen, you were ultimately questioned, and you lied.
Well, yeah. I lied many times, of course. That was something one did almost like it came as natural as drinking a glass of water because you knew the atmosphere was such that you would never even be considered for a job were you to come out yourself. When, toward the end of our times in government, because of some other people who had broken, shall we say, we were, in fact, ourselves questioned and looked at, but also cleared.
Steve, I think you were cleared because Skip resigned.
But he wasn't judged to have violated anything in the security regulations.
It just, Peter, as you learned more about this, how were you taking that in?
The entire process was a 12-year journey for me, learning not only about my great uncle's life, but also the experience of gay Americans. Executive Order 10450 identified and targeted a vulnerable minority to point to this minority as causing lots of societal ills. It's an incredible example of what can happen. People who have political power begin blaming our problems on a minority. Cutler did not have to bring forward the order that had been drafted under President Truman that contained the ban on sexual perversion. There had been another tightening of security rules that was proposed. And Cutler said, Mr. President, you should really go back and reconsider this other order. And this is probably owing to Bobby's sense of procedural government. But the fact was that it was Bobby who went back and brought forward this order. And my feeling is that Ike may well have understood that his top national security aide, Robert Cutler, was gay.
If he knew it, he loved Bobby Cutler, why would he sign that executive order?
I think he had such faith that Bobby Cutler would never get in trouble and would never jeopardize his presidency.
Was it a failure of your uncle's to not take that moment and stand up and say, well, then you're going to have to ban me too? You're nodding.
I believe so. in all honesty. I know Steve objects to this, but in fact, what's fascinating about the debate over Executive Order 10450 is that there's virtually no record of anybody questioning the inclusion of the ban on sexual perversion.
I don't think that Bobby Cutler or anyone could have done anything to reverse a set of policies. It was inconceivable that in those days anyone could have suddenly taken a contrary position with respect to this whole issue.
Look, Stephen Benedict, on this week, also as we recognize the Stonewall riots, when people said, I've had enough. Those men that had that uprising, it's just like 10 years after your silent, secret life in Washington.
Well, it was certainly a very important event. As far as I'm concerned, looking back 70 years, the most extraordinary thing is how far we've come. Certainly not as far as we should, but in those days to have conceived of gay marriage, for example, or someone running for the presidency who was openly gay and married would have been utterly inconceivable.
Hmm. Yeah. That's Stephen Benedict, who worked in the Eisenhower administration. We also spoke with author Peter Schinkel, whose new book about his uncle is Ike's Mystery Man, The Secret Lives of Robert Cutler, a gay man who was the country's first national security advisor.